That bites are relatively painless, and the belief that they transmit disease is a misconception, yet the return of the bed bug to American homes has been causing quite a stir recently. Today we welcome back Richard Cooper, entomologist and technical director of Cooper Pest Solutions, to discuss what has been discovered about these blood-sucking creatures since his last visit 12 months ago. Welcome.
Thank you. It's great to be back.
You gave my listeners such good advice last year, and yet the bedbugs still seem to be biting. Is the situation getting worse here? Is it spiraling out of control here in New York City?
Yeah, I believe it is spiraling out of control, and not just here in New York City, but nationwide. We're seeing more and more occurrences in small little towns, so there's virtually nowhere in the country that you can't run into them.
And then I read about a major lawsuit in a 4-star London hotel. So is this something that's happening everywhere?
Well, we're seeing in the UK, Australia, and the United States, as well as Canada, seem to be running a parallel course with this major resurgence.
Actually, I said 4-star, it was 5-star. And they are suing for millions of dollars after suffering hundreds of bites during their stay. So I'm assuming that wherever you go, if there are bed bugs, you're going to get a lot of bites.
Yeah, particularly because you can get multiple bites from a single bug. And so sometimes you can come away with half a dozen bites or so, and that could be one insect. So if you have a number of them feasting on you, you can get bitten quite badly.
So let's back up and talk about how that works. What do they look like, these creatures?
Well, it depends on what stage you're talking about. Starting with the egg, they're extremely tiny. They're only a millimeter in length. They're kind of pearly white in color, so very difficult to see.
Especially in sheets.
Correct, especially if it's against a light-colored surface. And then the immature stage, after it hatches out of the egg, is also just 1 millimeter in length. So, again, very, very small, pale, translucent. As they get older, they shed their skin 5 times until they become an adult, each time getting a little larger. And the adults are very visible. They're about 1/4 inch, sort of oval, flattened, almost tick-like in appearance, dark brown.
And why do they wind up in sheets?
Well, it's really a misnomer that they're in the sheets. It's really, they are in the vicinity of the bed, but they could be anywhere in the structure, and that's one of the big myths. People think, you know, get rid of the bed and wash the sheets and the problem's resolved, but they can be under baseboards, under floorboards, in personal items. But their main preference is to be close to the bed because that's where their host is. They're nocturnal. They feed almost exclusively at night while people are fast asleep. So obviously the closer to the bed, the better.
And you say that you can be bitten a number of times by the same bugs. So how often do they seek blood in a typical night?
That's an important question because actually bed bugs typically only feed once every week or two. So if you only have one or two bugs or a few bugs that you've introduced into your home, you may not get bitten every night. It might be a bite every few days, a bite every week, until they start reproducing and you start to develop a larger population, and then the bites are pretty much daily.
And how do they extract blood from humans during a bite?
They have a piercing mouth part similar to that of a mosquito, and they inject an enzyme which is sort of a numbing agent. So you don't feel the bite. You don't know you're being fed upon. Just like if you have a tick on you, you don't feel the presence of it. You don't feel them withdrawing the blood.
So if these bites are relatively painless and it's believed that they don't transmit diseases, why do you think bedbugs have provoked such a fierce reaction?
Yeah, I think it's more of an emotional situation. We get bitten by mosquitoes and we don't think a whole lot of it, yet they're disease-bearing organisms. You're left with a lot of itchy, unsightly welt, but I think it's the idea that while you're asleep, unsuspecting, you have these animals coming out of your bed, out of your home, feeding upon you and then disappearing back into the night and you don't see them.
Well, people can have allergic reactions to bee stings. Same thing with bedbugs?
Not to the same extent. people do have varying degrees of reaction, so it's more a matter of just how severe is the itching and how severe are the welts. But it would be unlikely for many people to have a significant reaction from a medical point of view.
Do bedbugs have any good qualities, or are they just bloodsuckers with no redeeming values?
Probably during its origins, they had some redeeming qualities in the food chain, but now that they have evolved to reside in our structures, I don't think there's too many redeeming qualities about them.
They once were taken as a cure to malaria, weren't they?
That I'm not aware of.
Well, there were all sorts of things where they sucked blood, leeches and the like. Now, last year, you said that we know very little about bedbugs. Has there been any improvement over the last 12 months?
There has been improvement. There are still probably far more questions than there are answers, but we definitely have increased our knowledge and have a much better understanding of what's going on.
I don't remember talking about dogs last year, but haven't they been introduced into the equation?
Yes, that's correct. Canine scent detection. And obviously dogs have been used to search out many things, search and rescue operations, drugs, bombs, cadavers, and so forth. So there is the use of dogs to sniff out bedbugs as well. There's not too many of them in the country, and what we're looking at now is, can these dogs be used at a high enough with a high enough level of reliability to make them an effective early detection tool?
Can they differentiate between live bedbugs and dead ones that just happen to be in the house?
Well, I think that certainly has to be a prerequisite of an effective canine that's being used for this purpose, is that they can detect between the two. I know we've been working with a trainer in Florida who is affiliated with the University of Florida, at least having done research with them on canine scent detection for termites. And in our work with him, we've gotten dogs to the point where they clearly can discriminate between live and dead. So we're looking to bring them up. We'll have a dog in about 3 to 4 weeks up here in New Jersey. And we're actually looking for places that we can take the dogs in and do further evaluations just to see how sensitive and how discriminating they really are.
Do bedbugs prefer humans to dogs? Or are the dogs as likely to be bitten as we are?
That's a real good question as well.
Because fleas will affect dogs and cats sometimes and then pretty much avoid humans unless they really are hungry.
Right, and that's something we don't understand. That's one of those areas of, a question that we don't have a good answer to. We know that bedbugs will feed on a wide variety of hosts. It could be a mouse, a rat, a dog, a cat, a gerbil, a hamster, but we don't really know much about host preference. So we don't have a clear understanding if they'll feed on them in the presence of a human host or only in the absence.
I'm talking with Richard Cooper, an entomologist and technical director of Cooper Pest Solutions. We're talking about bed bugs, which seem to be on the increase all around the world, at least we thought in urban situations, but now we're also seeing them, you say, in small towns.
Sure, and not just in residential settings. We're seeing them showing up in office buildings. There's been a report in a laundromat. I've heard of a report, although I don't know that it's been confirmed, in a movie theater. So we're starting to see them penetrate into the fabric of society, if you will. It's not commonplace. These are typically, for the most part, still residential pests, but they can go anywhere people go.
Are there certain insecticides that are effective against them?
Another interesting question, because one of the things we speculated the last time that we were on the show was about pesticide resistance. And since that time, over the last year, resistance has been, in fact, documented out of the University of Kentucky. And the resistance that's been documented is quite high. So
you're saying insecticides are not really the most effective approach?
I don't personally believe insecticides should be the first line of defense. They may be effective in one setting and then again not in another, depending on whether you're dealing with a resistant population. So relying on pesticides, I think, is potentially a mistake. Rather, I think the focus should be on non-chemical methods, with the pesticides perhaps as the last line of defense.
So what can we do?
Well, there are obviously a lot of things that can be done. I think when you have to separate it out as to whether it's preventing, trying to prevent yourself from bringing bedbugs into your own living quarters, or whether you're trying to react to an existing bedbug infestation.
Well, you could bring it in, obviously, by having stayed someplace where there were bedbugs. But aren't they also like roaches? If somebody on the floor below you gets them, you might very well get them too?
Yes, and that's one of the factors that we're finding is important in terms of getting control, is not just dealing with the unit that is identified, but with the problem, but also investigating the surrounding units. One of the pieces of information that we've gained over the last year is understanding better just how mobile they are between units, say in a hotel or in an apartment setting. And we find that somewhere in the neighborhood of 20 to 28% of the time, they will be in more than just one unit.
Do entomologists know what bedbugs do when they're not feeding?
No thorough behavioral ecology studies have been completed as of yet. The most common belief is that they just rest in an inactive state deep in cracks and crevices in their harborages.
So what can we do? We discover that we do have bedbugs. Are there any things that really are effective?
Well, one of the things that we've worked on, and again, I think we speculated about this previously, was the use of mattress encasements. They serve a number of roles. By mattress encasements, I mean completely enveloping the mattress, and not just the mattress, but maybe perhaps more importantly, the box spring. And by encasing both of these, you can trap bedbugs inside, having them remain there until they eventually die of starvation, which could be a number of months. But more importantly than that, even, is restricting their movement to the exterior of the encasement and preventing them from really entrenching themselves into the box spring and the mattress itself.
And once they have entrenched themselves, the only answer is to throw away the mattress?
No, because, again, well, some people, just emotionally, they need to discard the mattress. They can't deal with the thought of sleeping on a mattress that's encased with bedbugs. But others aren't in a position to throw them away. They simply can't afford that. And by encasing the mattress, you can salvage it as well as prevent future bugs that are moving from the surrounding environment to the bed from reinfesting it.
Well, a listener asked, after battling bed bugs for almost a year, I think I'm finally rid of them. Can you offer any advice on how to make sure they're gone and prevent a recurrence?
Well, again, I feel very strongly about the whole idea of the encasements, because one of the things that the encasements do on a bed from a proactive position is that they enable you to quickly detect bed bugs. They don't give the bedbugs a place to really hide. So if bedbugs are reintroduced, you're more likely to notice them more rapidly than if the bed wasn't encased. But the bites are going to be the telltale sign. If you're not being bitten for, say, at least several weeks, then you can assume that the problem really is resolved.
Now, we got an email from somebody who starts off by saying, "Please don't identify me by my email address." One of the problems with bedbugs is that even though they can strike the rich and the poor alike, we do associate them with something that would be embarrassing.
Right. And I think that goes back, to the history of bedbugs in the United States. It typically was associated with the lower socioeconomic strata. And for some reason, people associate it with filth, which it has nothing to do with either right now. Sanitation doesn't bring bedbugs, and bedbugs don't discriminate upon your wealth. So they can strike the rich just as well as the poor.
Do you see this as a continuing problem, or do you foresee some time in the future where we'll actually be able to control this?
No, I think we're making great strides in terms of control. I do think that this is going to continue to spiral out of control quite a bit more before it gets better. But I do think that we're getting a better understanding literally with each passing month and getting a better handle on controlling the pest.
This listener writes, "I got rid of mine by opening the windows when it was zero outside and circulating the freezing air throughout the whole bedroom with fans for a whole day until my thermometer confirmed that the farthest reaches were down to 20 degrees. Prior to that, I noticed that they cannot climb on plastic, so I wrap my box spring with polyethylene." Yeah. Do you know about cold? Is that an effective way of dealing with bedbugs?
Cold is not really a very effective way. Of course, you can freeze bedbugs, but the strategy that was just described in itself wouldn't resolve a bed bug problem.
But the encasement in polyurethane would?
Well, wouldn't resolve it by itself either. That's just one step in, you know, a number of steps that need to be taken.
How do you encase?
Well, there's obviously if you go to the store, there's a lot of encasements available. There's only one encasement that I am aware of that is actually tested and proven to be effective against bed bugs, and it's an encasement that's made by Protect-A-Bed. We have information on our website, which if you're interested, you can take a look at and get as well.
Why don't you give your website address?
Okay, the website is www.cooperpest.com.
And why would that one be more effective than the others?
Well, simply because it's tested. We've looked at encasements. We were involved in doing a lot of laboratory testing with an independent laboratory. And some of the zippers that we looked at, bed bugs were actually able to just come right between the teeth and escape the encasement. Others got out around the place where the zipper stops, the end stop. And then some materials were actually bite-proof.
And how much would typical good encasement cost?
The encasements that we were involved in looking at, I think they run, I want to say, in the $80 to $100 range.
So it's not cheap. On the other hand, preventing yourself from being bitten by bed bugs in increasing numbers might make that worthwhile.
Right. And what's the cost of throwing out a mattress and then by bringing in a new one and having it become reinfested?
Richard Cooper is an entomologist and technical director of Cooper Pest Solutions. I want to thank him so much for being back with us today.
Thank you.
Good night, Mr. Bedbug. Good night. I hope that you sleep tight. I hope that the people don't bite. Good night, Mr. Bedbug. Good night. See, you traveled from town to town before a bedbug got get around. Oh, I wish I had my very own bed, but every night it's someone else's instead. I hope you don't mind if I stay. You know, I've come such a long, long way. I dip in bed most every night. You know, it's hard to find one that feels just right. Good night, Mr. Bedbug, good night. I hope that you sleep tight.